It's nearly 63 years since the American novelist Ernest Hemingway died, yet his work and his life continue to fascinate. It's the subject of Dermot Ross's debut novel Hemingway's Goblet, about a London-based lawyer called Nick Harrison, who discovers his grandfather had not only met the writer but may have inspired him. It comes as Nick's career as a law lecturer at a prestigious university hangs in the balance over his relationship with a student. The book explores relationships in the hashtag MeToo era, with a look to Hemingway's reputation as a heavy drinker and womaniser. Dermot Ross had worked as a corporate lawyer for 40 years, but had always wanted to write a novel. This one took him places Hemingway frequented in Spain. And Dermot's with us in the Auckland studio to talk about the inspiration for the book. Kia ora, Dermot. Welcome.
Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for having me.
Were you a Hemingway aficionado and obsessive necessarily before this?
Oh, no, definitely not an obsessive. I think I would classify myself as having been better informed than the average person. I read two of his novels when I was a high school student, and a famous biography of him when I was at university. So I certainly had the basic groundwork knowledge of him, and I've always been fascinated by his larger-than-life character, frankly. He always pops up everywhere.
So what and when did he appear as a critical component of this first book? Well, the first novel, I should say.
Well, about 6 years ago, I was searching for a plot, really, to write a novel. I hadn't written anything before. And I came across this item in Vanity Fair magazine, which was an excerpt of a recently produced book, a non-fiction book, about the visit that Hemingway and his wife and their friends made to Spain in 1925. And that group of people was a riot of fun, really. There was so much intrigue and argument and adultery and accusations and fighting even. And that group of people just made me think, wow, what an interesting bunch. And I wonder if I could somehow bring that into a work of fiction. And so I had the bright idea, at least I thought it was at the time, to invent a character who would spend some time with them at that time. And so it just grew from there, actually.
So, interestingly, what you've described, I think, is what perhaps some people would hold about Hemingway in the kind of romantic sense, you know, his macho masculinity, his love of adventure, whether it was war or bullfighting or hunting or whatever. But that's not really thematically where the novel goes. Quite the converse. And how, as you began to plot and write the story, how did that happen for you?
Well, I had the basic plan, as I've just outlined, and I thought, well, I can't have a book just about that. I think there are too many fictional books about Hemingway out there. And so I decided to make it a lesser part of the plot. And so I then thought, well, how about something along the lines of Possession by A.S. Byatt, which I'm sure you're familiar with, where you have a modern relationship and they're delving back into history. And that's how it developed. And so the real emphasis in the book is on the modern relationship between the pair in London, but drawing on and using the Hemingway material as a mystery, as a quest, which, when revealed, brings out more about the modern couple, particularly the man. So that's how it developed.
So tell us about the character of Harris in The Sun Also Rises and how he came to be, or, you know, to be the fictional character, essentially, or the character on whom yours is based.
Yes. Well, first of all, I should have mentioned earlier that the famous novel that really made Hemingway's name, The Sun Also Rises, was based entirely upon, or largely upon, his visit to Spain in the 1920s, using the same characters with fictional names. But during during several days before they went to Pamplona in the novel, they went fishing at a little town just in the foothills of the Pyrenees, and there was an Englishman fishing there called Harris. Now, Harris had no real role in the book at all that I could see. He didn't go on to Pamplona and join in all the shenanigans. He just did his fishing. He joined them for fishing. And he was a very bland character, uninteresting. There was no development of his character. And so I thought, wow, that gives me an opportunity to create something about that person. And that is what I have done.
So tell us about your character of Nick, because he's not exactly bland like Harris, indeed.
No, he's definitely not bland. What I was trying to do in formulating the character of Nick was to describe a certain kind of man who is in many ways outwardly very successful, which he is in the book. He's charismatic with a small C. He's good looking, I think, and he seems to have a lot of friends. He seems to have a lot of women friends in particular. But yet, when you sort of scratch below the surface a little bit, you find someone who is full of poor judgment. He's a little naive, or more than a little naive. He perhaps lacks empathy. He's definitely a commitment phobe. And I think you will find there are many men like that out there. I'd like to think I'm not entirely like him myself, but I'll let others judge for that.
Well, just elaborate on that. Who is it, or what is it, that wanted you to focus on these things in this character? Like, what's the recognisability? Is it the recognisability of a generation, of a profession, dare I say it?
Dare we not say profession? No. but there are aspects of male characters like that. I often talk to women friends, and they do quite often describe the men they meet and the men they know, and even the men they marry, as having some of those characteristics. And I don't think it's necessarily a modern thing, because I've tried to draw parallels between Nick, the modern character, and Hemingway, the man who lived 100 years ago. So it's not entirely a modern thing, but I think it's just we're now more aware of it.
What of the character of Adrienne?
Well, I've tried to create her as a very modern young woman. I again let others judge on that. I've deliberately made her motives in her activities and her actions vague and, shall we say, ambiguous until sort of revelations towards the end of the book. But yes, no, I liked her character very much, and I hope the readers do as well.
You actually travelled to the places, all the key places featured in the book. I guess this is the fun part of researching
a
novel.
It's absolute fun part, and people have commented on the fact that I include some of the menus and the restaurants where some of the conversations take place. Yes, I had the great pleasure of going to San Sebastian and Alicante and Pamplona, all in Spain. Alicante is a fabulous little city on the Costa del Sol. I'd never been to before, nor Pamplona for that matter. And I also had the opportunity of a little trip to Hong Kong as well, where one of the chapters is set.
Did you learn more about him and the scope of his fame and lasting, enduring kind of intrigue for people?
Oh, yes. I had to do a lot of research. I have masses of books on Hemingway and by Hemingway. You know, I have about 50 in my bedroom. But that doesn't put me anywhere near the top rank of Hemingway experts or scholars. But what I did learn, not that I spoke to many people, I've learned it from my reading, is that they have an ambivalent attitude towards Hemingway in Spain, particularly in Pamplona with the famous bull running festival every July. That's now crammed out with tourists, particularly American college boys wanting to run with the bulls. And the original character is gone, and many of them blame Hemingway for the instigation of mass tourism, really.
Are you expecting, you meant the many books that have been written about him, are you expecting a bit of a backlash because this is where one imagines imagines a kind of a Hemingway retelling, if you like. And is there a whole class of academic who might be lying in wait, do you think, Dermot?
Oh, yes, you've hit it in one. Absolutely. There is an August society called the Hemingway Society, of which I'm a member, based in the US, and that consists mainly of academics at East Coast universities who take very, very seriously indeed the legacy of Ernest Hemingway, and they have examined his life and works in minute detail. And to their great credit, they've been able to put aside some of the more toxic aspects of his character, because the art he produced, his fictional works, were of such a high and groundbreaking standard that he is they're wonderful. And so I do fear that if they come across my novel, and I will try and put it before them, and see that I have actually played Hemingway for laughs, as I call it. I've sort of amped up his most well-known characteristics in my novel, then they might feel a bit affronted that there's this upstart from down under who is trying to teach them how to suck eggs, or who is attacking their holy man.
This challenge of reassessing writers and indeed characters in history through the contemporary lens, which you have to do when you write a contemporary novel, what sort of experience has that been for you?
Well, it's been most interesting, because the more you read about Hemingway, and I've said somewhere else that he is probably the most documented writer around, and certainly in the Western world, in my view. Everything about him is known, and yet still more stuff is coming out every year. New letters are fallen. That his character was very divisive. You know, he doesn't stand up now. If he acted in 2024 like he did in 1925, then he would be cast aside, I think, as just bombastic and ignorant and, you know, racist and anti-Semitic, and all his many faults would be so much criticized. But I think one has to cut him some slack, simply because his characteristics, which I've just mentioned, were just not so much out of the ordinary. They weren't so outrageous 100 years ago.
What of the writing itself, Dermot? Your first novel, you're taking on one of the greats in part as a subject matter. Did Hemingway's writing style influence yours at all, or do you just have to write the way you write?
Well, it's a good question, actually, Catherine. I did try to shorten my sentences, because Hemingway was famous for short sentences, as you know. Very few adjectives, very few adverbs. Let the reader decide what he's meaning to say. So I tried to do that, but I found it difficult. I did a word search for the letters L-Y to see how many adverbs I have in, and there were hundreds. Of course, you can't completely disregard them. And so I moved away from his writing style as I was writing. And in fact, the more I read him, his work, the more sort of peculiar it now seems to me, actually. It's so studied and so stylized and so much imitated by subsequent writers that it is almost, but not quite, a parody of itself. You know, it's sort of Hemingway-esque, and you say that with a smile on your face.
Interesting. I'm just thinking now of our communication via emoji.
Well, indeed.
I'm not going to predict the death of the novel. It's happened a few times before. You're a lawyer by profession, and
yes.
Was it a case in some ways of waiting for that time to undertake? What is an ambition? Always an ambitious.
It's a big job to write a book. It certainly is. And, and I've been full-time lawyer for, as you say, 40 years, more than that, in fact. So I decided 5 years ago, no time to do it. If I'm ever going to write a book, might as well start it now. So I did that, and I just sat down one Boxing Day 2019 and just started writing longhand, you'll be amused to know, on long, big legal foolscap pads, and just went at it several hours every morning for about 5 or 6 months, and managed to come out with the first draft, which obviously required a lot of work. But yeah, that's how it came about.
Professionally, as an aside, you're honorary consul for Latvia. I'm always curious about that.
Yes, I am.
Role
yes.
in life. Explain more about how you came to be and what the role is.
It's a very minor role, but quite important. Just so happened that a friend of mine who was the honorary consul for Sweden told me that the Latvian government were looking for a suitable individual to represent the interests of Latvian citizens in Auckland, and would I be interested? And I said, why not? And so that is what it is. And I help people, you know, Latvians out with immigration queries and lost passports, and help them celebrate their national days and things like that. And also accompany visiting Latvian dignitaries.
So it's essentially for Latvian people here or visiting
yes,
here?
Yes, absolutely.
Because one's thinking about Europe at the moment and the nation's neighbours.
It's
a stressful time.
It's a very, very difficult time for the Latvians, actually, because, you know, they're regarded as being in the front rank of likely people to be invaded next, should that happen.
Mm. Another book, Dermot?
Yes, there's definitely one in my mind at this stage. It's no further than that. It's I won't give you many clues, but the current thinking, which is subject to massive change, is to set it in Africa, East Africa, in the 1920s, possibly with a modern element as well.
With Hemingway and Wilde again, or not?
No, not with Hemingway.
You're done with him.
Done with him. I'll move on from him. He's just a phase in my life. But possibly involving the grandfather character in my book.
Very good. Thank you. Dermot Ross and his debut novel, Hemingway's Goblet, is published by Mary Egan Publishing.